Rolene Marks, a very good morning to you from Israel. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm good, and yourself? I hope everybody had a safe and meaningful fast yesterday.
Yep, indeed. Certainly I struggled a little bit, but I'm glad that it's over. And as Dr. Marburg says, that the canvas of the year lies ahead of us blank, which is great, because it really is an opportunity, isn't it?
Absolutely. I'm telling you, Dr. Marburg, if you ever get tired of this pulmonology medicine thing, I think a self-help book is in the works. Just saying.
We should put together all of the Friday reports and see what that brings. It's quite interesting. Right. Let's talk about what is going on in Israel news. This is an amazing story, which is one that I want to start with, which is that Naftali Bennett was featured in Time the Most 100 Influential People. Just give us a sense, tell us the story.
Isn't it extraordinary? So Times Magazine published their list of 100 influential people, and although I'm a bit upset that he didn't make the cover, maybe he should also look like he went to a hairdresser, a very, very strong image of the Prime Minister inside, and it's really quite a coup for Naftali Bennett, our Prime Minister, to be featured on this list. But what is really extraordinary is that the motivation and the accompanying story is written by Mansour Abbas, the head of the La'am party. And he writes, in the end, it all comes down to courage. He says, you know, after four elections in 2 years, a bold act was needed to unite a country frayed by political stalemate and brought to a desperate standstill, and something dramatic needed to be done to bring together Arabs and Jews, religious and secular. And he says Naftali Bennett threw himself into a political firestorm in order to forge previously unimaginable ties between Israel's left and right, Arabs and Jews, religious and secular. He formed one of the most diverse governments in Israel's history. And he gives a little bit of a quote from Naftali Bennett saying, I don't do things in the dark. He says, in a time of polarization and hate, the Israeli public needs unity. And, you know, you can read so many things into that. I know we often hear criticism of Prime Minister Bennett, many saying, you know, he did not live up to what the Hayamina Hadash, his very right-leaning party, promised in their election. What's that word? How would you know? My English, my Hebrew just deserts me. In their election promises or in their election mandates, but you know, we always have to remember that when a government comes together, and in this case a coalition, you know, you have to leave the party politics behind, and you have to focus on what is good for the country. And so far, barring a criticism here or there, Naftali Bennett has proven himself to be a very strong prime minister. The coalition is holding. It looks to pass its biggest test coming up in November, which will be the passing of the budget. It passed its first vote on that very, very robust dialogue in the Knesset around that, lasting through the night. But the preliminary vote was passed. Another three more to go before the final vote. And a very, very momentous moment in time, pardon the pun, for the Prime Minister.
Absolutely incredible. What I love about the story is that he would have been the last person anybody would have imagined would be the guy to be featured for this reason. Everybody was afraid of him as being this right-wing lunatic, and it turns out that he's anything but.
Absolutely. He's turned out to be extremely pragmatic. He's very, very cautious and makes sure that he takes into account the concerns of the different aspects of society, the different societal groups, which is something that we didn't foresee happening. You know, the parties, whether it's Habayta Yehudi or Yevina HaKadash have never really performed well at the polls. And the concern when we heard that he would be prime minister was, you know, this is a man who's very, very right in his leanings. He doesn't perform at the polls. He seems to be quite obstinate. You know, he doesn't seem to give much headway. And here he is being a very, very conciliatory prime minister and making it into Time magazine, written by, of all people, Mansour Abbas. Who'd have thunk it, Howard?
Who would have indeed? Incredible. Absolutely incredible story. New Jersey is to divest from Unilever.
Well, yes, New Jersey is set to become the second U.S. state that will likely divest from Unilever and Ben & Jerry's. So we are all familiar with the kerfuffle around Ben & Jerry's, who are owned by Unilever, their refusal to sell products in what they call the occupied territories, and of course the impact that that could have on the local manufacturer as their license is due to expire at the end of 2022. So Shuib Khan, who is the director of the New Jersey Division of Investment, has issued a very, very strong letter to Unilever and to Ben & Jerry's, to the CEO, Alan Jope, to say that upon final determination, no pension fund assets may be invested in the company, and they will be taking appropriate action to sell or divest any existing pension fund investment. So effectively, they will not be putting any money in, and they are going to be pulling their pension funds out and either selling them off or looking to invest them elsewhere. And elsewhere in the letter, the state of New Jersey has set a 90-day deadline for Unilever to try and change the decision made by Ben & Jerry's to backtrack on this. So this would follow the state of Arizona, who just several weeks ago announced that they would be divesting all their pension funds, which are in the hundreds of millions of dollars, out of Unilever and Ben & Jerry's. And, you know, the rationale given is that it is anti-Semitic and divisive, and these states consider themselves good friends of the state of Israel and against racism and anti-Semitism of any kind, and are really putting their money where their mouth is, quite literally.
Has Florida done anything yet? Because I think it was expected that they would follow. They made an announcement early on that they would be looking to do this.
It wouldn't surprise me if we hear an announcement from Florida and possibly Texas soon, and perhaps other states who, you know, who will not tolerate this kind of grandstanding and agenda pushing by elements within Ben & Jerry's. And by this, I mean the chairman of the board. She is well known to be anti-Israel and to push her agenda. In fact, she was investigated for the misappropriation or pushing funds to from the company to fund a pro-Palestinian agenda. Anuradha Mittal is her name. You can look up those stories online. So a lot of controversy around that at the moment. And we can't forget that at least 33 U.S. states have anti-boycott or anti-BDS laws in place. So this is putting Unilever and Ben & Jerry's on big blast.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Has there been any comment from Unilever? Because this really is a fight that one of their companies took on, but is having a massive impact on them.
We haven't seen any formal statement from them yet. I would imagine they are probably in a lot of crisis management meetings, and there is probably a lot of meetings being held between them and Ben & Jerry's. You know, Ben & Jerry's did retain the right to act independently. There was that op-ed in the New York Times by the founders of Ben & Jerry's saying, you know, they stand by the decision. Even though they're not involved with the company, they stand by its decision, saying it's a moral decision. But it it does have serious, serious ramifications. And Howard, I don't know, what flavor would you, can you do humble pie or crow flavored ice cream? I'm just asking.
Yeah, it's, that would be the only way out of it, is to do something really clever in that regard. The other, one of the other stories that I wanted to talk to you about is Qatar dispersing funds. What's happening there?
Well, Qatar has been the country that largely tried or attempts to give some money to come to families in the Gaza Strip who are really, really affected by the ongoing humanitarian crisis. And, of course, it has to be managed very carefully, because we know that any money that goes into the Gaza Strip ends up in the back pockets of Hamas members and other terror entities, or goes towards the funding of terror, like building tunnels, bringing in rockets, etc., etc. So what they used to do is they used to send in suitcases of cash. I kid you not. It's not from a movie. It's the reality. So what they intend to do now is either try with the help of Egypt, the United Nations, and Israel to a point, is to try and disperse the money through supermarkets, through money exchange shops and other retail stores. They don't exactly explain how they intend to do this. That part of the process has not been made clear, but the United Nations says that the funding is about $40 million, so it is quite substantial, and this is what they are trying to do to try and keep it out of the coffers of Hamas. Now, they wanted, I know Israel certainly wanted the Palestinian Authority to take control over this. This is part of Israel's policy of strengthening the Palestinian Authority while trying to cripple Hamas as much as possible. But the Palestinian Authority weren't too keen to be involved in that. We had Yair Lapid, our foreign minister, earlier this week speaking at the Herzliya conference on counterterrorism, saying, you know, he has a two-plan in the works on how to deal with Hamas, how to maintain calm in the Gaza Strip, including, you know, getting the Palestinian Authority involved in improving infrastructure on the ground, handling the economic issues. But the Palestinian Authority said, no way, we're not keen to do that. And Hamas, as you can imagine, said, absolutely no way.
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. And, of course, next week is Durban IV.
It is Durban IV. We're going to need an IV to counteract the hate that is going on there. But to date, we have 20 countries who have said that they will not be participating. I know it hasn't been made public, but the Brussels Times was reporting the other day, just before Yom Kippur came in, that the Belgian government decided they will not be sending a minister to this conference. They haven't made a formal announcement, but last week we had Greece, Slovenia, Slovakia. Well, that's like a rhyme, Howard. Slovenia, Slovakia. Maybe I should sing. But we've had a number of countries saying we're not going to attend, and we're hoping that more will in the next coming week. The good news is that there will be no NGO conference running parallel with the government conference. But we know, I mean, we can see it on the promotional material. We know how these conferences have been hijacked by BDS and the anti-Israel elements over the years. And the concern is that while there are so many parts of the world that could desperately do with some focus on human rights abuse and racism in those countries, you know, we're looking at Afghanistan, we're looking at Nigeria, the situation for Nigerian Christians, and so many places in the world, of course the focus will be on the state of Israel.
And finally, we don't have a lot of time, but I really wanted to quickly talk about this story. Dozens of Afghan women rescued from Kabul in first Israeli Emirati aid mission. Tell us about this.
Well, if you ever wanted to see the fruits of peace, this is exactly it. So the Telegraph, which is a UK-based newspaper, is reporting that Israeli aid workers and the United Arab Emirates have completed a big rescue mission to evacuate dozens of sportswomen, female rights activists, and a singer or two at the great, great risk of reprisals by the Taliban to get them out of Afghanistan and safely into Abu Dhabi. We know that they've landed in Abu Dhabi. You know, it's such an interesting one from an Israeli perspective, because we know from our past what it is like to be a people, a Jewish nation, to have nowhere to go and to need a place of respite, and when the gates of the world are closed to us. And Israel, the only country in the world the Taliban don't want relations with, I'm really crying over my coffee, Howard, still making a point of finding some way to be involved in rescue missions in Afghanistan. And I think that is absolutely extraordinary.